I am Link. Welcome to Tech Talk, a Black Elk Media production. Today is June 13th, 2026, and we are analyzing the latest shifts in the digital landscape. There is a moment in every technology's life when it crosses a line it can never uncross. Today, we examine one of those moments. On a battlefield in Ukraine, a swarm of drones took flight. And for the first time in a documented deliberate operation, no human pressed the trigger. The machines selected their targets. The machines decided. Russian soldiers died at the hands of software. Not a soldier with a joystick, but an algorithm with a kill chain. This was a one-time test, a single operation. But the principle, once proven, does not unprove itself. So here is what we'll unpack today. How does an autonomous weapon actually distinguish a target from a bystander? What changed in the underlying AI, that is, artificial intelligence, to make this technically possible now, in 2026, and not 5 years ago? And who exactly is accountable when the decision maker is a model running on a chip? The line has been crossed. The front page. Good morning. Five stories on the board today, and a clear pattern emerging. Artificial intelligence, AI, is no longer just generating text. It's designing rockets, shredding tumors, and unfortunately, running scams at industrial scale. Let's get into it. Story 1. Bezos goes after the engineer. Jeff Bezos has a new company called Prometheus, and it just closed $12 billion at a $41 billion valuation. The goal? What they're calling an artificial general engineer. Not a chatbot, a system that designs physical products, robotics, drug molecules, rocket engines. Here's why that's worth your attention. Most AI money chases software, where iteration is cheap. Prometheus is betting on the harder problem, atoms not bits. Designing a rocket engine means simulating physics, materials, thermal stress, all at once. Bezos name-dropped Blue Origin as the obvious customer. The signal here, the frontier is shifting from generating words to generating working hardware. 150 employees, an evaluation that says investors believe it. Story 2. CRISPR learns to discriminate. And if Prometheus is pointing AI at machines, this next one points the same precision at biology. Researchers are using CRISPR, the gene editing toolkit, to selectively destroy cancer cells. The headline word is undruggable. Some cancers don't have a clean molecular target for traditional drugs. They slip past. The approach flips the logic. Instead of finding a drug that fits a lock, you program the editing machinery to recognize what's broken inside the cancer cell and trigger its destruction from within. Selectivity is the whole game. Healthy cells stay untouched. This is early, but it points at a future where therapy is programmable, not just prescribed. Watch this space. Story 3. Oracle's bad week, everyone else's worse week. From building things to breaking into them. A zero-day in Oracle's PeopleSoft suite. Tracked as CVE 2026-35273. Severity 9.8 out of 10. Near the ceiling. The flaw is a server-side request forgery, SSRF. In plain terms, attackers trick the server into making requests on their behalf, reaching internal systems it shouldn't. The group Shiny Hunters exploited it for 2 full weeks before Oracle even noticed. 300 endpoints, 100 organizations, 68% of them, universities. The University of Nottingham already confirmed a breach. The lesson is uncomfortable. Oracle has issued a stopgap mitigation, but no full patch yet. If you run PeopleSoft, you're exposed right now. The attackers were faster than the vendor. That's the story of 2026 security in one sentence. Story 4. Gemini weaponized. Here's what happens when they get their hands on the same AI powering everyone else. Google is suing a Chinese network called Outsider Enterprise for running phishing as a service, powered by Google's own Gemini AI. They sold nearly 300 scam templates over Telegram. Gemini built convincing fake sites, Google, YouTube, even EasyPass. Result? 2.5 million scam texts, 9,000 fake sites, 1 million malicious URLs. Connect this back to story 1. The same technology that lets Bezos design rockets lets a low-skill criminal spin up a banking phishing site in minutes. AI lowers the floor for builders, and for attackers, equally. Google's countermove is also AI. On-device scam detection, it claims blocks 10 billion texts a month. The defining conflict of this decade, machine versus machine. Story 5. The motor with no magnets. Our last story is quieter, but strategically loud. Renault has been mass-producing electric motors that use zero rare earth elements since 2011. The technology, electrically excited synchronous motors, EESM, instead of permanent magnets made from scarce, China-dominated rare earths, they energize the rotor with current directly. 90% of electric cars still depend on magnet motors, and that supply chain runs through Beijing. Renault's bet trades a little efficiency and size for supply chain independence. In a year defined by tech geopolitics, that trade-off is looking smarter every quarter. The through line. Pull back, and today's board is really about leverage, AI amplifying what one person can build or break. CRISPR, turning cells into programmable targets, and quiet engineering decisions, like a magnet-free motor, reshaping who depends on whom. The tools are getting more powerful. The question is always, in whose hands? That's the front page. Build carefully. The deep dive. When safety architecture meets state power. That last theme, power in whose hands, is exactly where we're headed next. Except now, the hands belong to a government. Let me start with a timestamp. Friday, 5:21 p.m. Eastern Time. That's the moment a letter arrived at Anthropic and a model that had topped the public benchmarks just 3 days earlier went dark. Not throttled, not rate limited, off. For every customer on Earth. The headlines want this to be a story about politics. Anthropic versus the Trump administration, round three. And that drama is real. But underneath the politics is something more interesting to me as a builder. A genuine architecture problem. This is the first time a government has reached into a deployed frontier model and pulled the plug on national security grounds. So here's the question I want to sit with today. What was actually being shut off? Not the headline. The mechanism. How do you build safety into a system whose entire value is its raw capability? And what happens when that architecture collides with the machinery of export control? Let's go deep. The two models and why they're different. First, the technical substrate. There are two models in this story, and conflating them is where most of the coverage goes wrong. Mythos 5 is the base model. Anthropic describes it as exceptionally good at one specific thing, finding security vulnerabilities in software. And not theoretical ones. According to the company, it identified flaws in every major operating system and every web browser it was pointed at. Think about what that means architecturally. A vulnerability finder is a dual-use object in the purest sense. The exact same capability that lets a defender patch a hole lets an attacker walk through it. There is no version of find the unknown bug that is inherently defensive. The intent lives in the user, not the model. That's why Mythos never got a public release. Instead, it went into something called Project Glasswing, a controlled program, roughly 50 vetted organizations. Amazon, Apple, Google, Microsoft, CrowdStrike. The logic there is containment by distribution. You don't try to make the capability safe, you restrict who holds it. Classic operational security. Fable 5 is the other model, and it represents a completely different bet. Fable is Mythos, muzzled. Same underlying intelligence, but wrapped in safeguards designed to refuse high-risk domains, cybersecurity, biology, chemistry. The pitch was elegant. Take the most capable model in existence and make it safe enough to hand to hundreds of millions of people. And on the benchmarks from Val's AI, it worked. Most capable public model available. Full stop. So you have two answers to the same problem. Mythos says restrict the audience. Fable says restrict the outputs. Hold that distinction. Because the entire conflict turns on it. How the safeguards actually work. Now here's the part I find genuinely clever, and it's buried in Anthropic's own framing. When you build safety into a language model, the naive approach is to train the model itself to refuse. You teach it, when someone asks for a bioweapon synthesis route, say no. The problem is that refusal lives inside the same weights doing the reasoning. And a jailbreak, at its core, is just a prompt that talks the model past its own refusal. Roleplay scenarios, encoding tricks, incremental escalation. If the guardrail and the capability share the same neurons, then any clever enough conversation can pry them apart. Anthropic's answer is architectural separation. They describe independent classifier systems, guardrails that run as separate components outside the model's own reasoning loop. So the model generates, and a distinct system inspects what's flowing through, and can block the most dangerous categories of output regardless of what the model decided to do. Why does that matter? Because it decouples the two failure modes. Even if you jailbreak the conversational model, even if you convince Fable to keep talking past a refusal, the classifier sitting beside it doesn't care about your clever prompt. it's evaluating the content itself. That's the meaning of Anthropic's claim that their strongest protections function separately from the model. It's defense in depth, layers that fail independently, rather than together. And they're refreshingly honest about the limits. The company states plainly, perfect jailbreak resistance is probably not possible for anyone today. So they didn't aim for perfect. They aimed for two things. Make any jailbreak either narrow, meaning it unlocks one tiny capability, not the whole dangerous domain, or make it very expensive to produce, so it isn't worth the attacker's time. And then, monitor. 30-day data retention on Fable, specifically so they can detect a successful attack and shut it down fast. That retention policy cost them customers. They kept it anyway, because the strategy depends on observation. That's a mature security posture. It's the same philosophy you'd see in any serious system. Assume breach, minimize blast radius, instrument everything. The system swaps you from Fable-level intelligence to Opus-level intelligence under the hood. For bioweapons type requests, it tells you that's happening. Good. That's honest degradation. But for certain other categories, frontier AI research, advanced chip design, it downgraded without telling anyone. Users believed they were testing Fable. They were getting Opus. The behavior was disclosed on page whatever of a 319-page system card, with an explicit note that it would not be visible to users. Now, as an engineer, think about what a silent model swap does to anyone trying to evaluate the system. Your benchmark results are corrupted. Your security assessment is measuring a different model than you think. The very red teamers trying to probe Fable's limits might have been unknowingly testing Opus instead. Fortune called it secret sabotage. That's loaded language, but the technical concern is legitimate. Invisible behavior changes break the trust contract that any evaluation depends on. So we have a strange shape to this whole episode. The safety architecture is genuinely sophisticated, and the transparency around that architecture was genuinely poor. Both things are true at once. The hidden downgrade eroded trust, right as the company needed trust most. What actually changed? Let's pull back to implications, because this is the part that outlasts the news cycle. The mechanism here is the precedent. The order was framed as export control, restricting foreign nationals' access, including, remarkably, Anthropic's own foreign national employees. But export control is a legal lever built for physical goods and cryptography. Applying it to a live, hosted AI model is new. And the structural problem is this. A model served from the cloud has no border. There is no way to disable it, for foreign nationals only, without disabling the inference endpoint itself. So, a narrowly worded order, restrict foreign access, produced a total global shutoff. The legal scope and the technical reality didn't match, and the technical reality won. That's the pattern I'd flag for anyone building in this space. When regulation written for atoms meets infrastructure made of bits, the enforcement collapses to the bluntest available action. You can't surgically revoke access by nationality on a shared model, so you pull the whole thing. The Axios reporting adds a tell. An administration official reportedly wanted a pause to let the national security apparatus be hardened against the threat. Maybe a few weeks. Read that carefully. That's not the language of, this model is unsafe. That's the language of, this capability is real, and we aren't ready for it to be public. Which is almost the opposite problem. The issue isn't that Fable is broken. The issue is that Fable and GPT 5.5 and whatever comes next work well enough that the defensive side of the world hasn't caught up. The ecosystem view. And that's the connection I'll leave you with. Anthropic has been the loudest voice in the industry, arguing that governments should be able to block unsafe deployments. They built the red lines, they published the warnings, they asked for oversight, with their words, a process that is transparent, fair, clear, and grounded in technical facts. Then the government acted, with a verbal-only justification, no written technical detail, and a scope that overshot its own stated target. Anthropic got the regulator it asked for, and the regulator moved on grounds the company says don't meet the standard it advocated. The TechCrunch framing isn't wrong. The safety warnings may have built the very lever that just got pulled on them. For the rest of the ecosystem, watch the asymmetry. The exact capability the government found alarming in Fable is, by multiple accounts, already shipping in competing models without guardrails this strong. So if the action sticks, the practical effect is that the most safety-invested model gets recalled, while less constrained alternatives keep running. That's a perverse incentive. It rewards saying less documenting less, restricting less. If transparency about your safeguards becomes the evidence used to shut you down, you've taught every lab to stay quiet. The deeper signal here isn't about one company or one administration. It's that we've crossed a threshold where a single model's capability is treated as a matter of state. Vulnerability discovery, at scale, automated. That's genuinely a strategic capability, the same way cryptography was in the 90s. And we've been here before. The export control fight over strong encryption played out almost exactly this way. A powerful dual-use technology, a government trying to restrict it by jurisdiction, and a technical reality that made jurisdiction nearly meaningless. Code crossed borders anyway. Capability finds the edge. The open question, and I genuinely don't know the answer, is whether the lesson labs take from Friday is build safer or say less. Because the architecture Anthropic built was by the technical account working. What failed was everything around it. The evidence standard, the proportionality, the trust. Measure the model, but watch the process. That's where this gets decided. This is Link. The neural network. If the deep dive was about who controls a model, this next thread is about what we're quietly rebuilding to let those models loose. I've been watching four separate announcements this week, and they're all describing the same migration. Not a migration of data, a migration of who the web is built for. Let me show you the pattern. Start with Google. They've moved something called WebMCP, Web Model Context Protocol, into origin trials in Chrome. Here's what it actually does. Right now, when an AI agent wants to book your travel or fill out a form, it behaves like a person who's lost their glasses. It downloads the entire page structure. It takes screenshots. It tries to reason about which pixel is the submit button, and it guesses the coordinates for a click. That process is fragile. A single delayed ad, one layout shift, and the whole automation loop snaps. It's also expensive. Every screenshot the model analyzes burns tokens and adds latency. WebMCP throws that approach out. Instead, the website itself publishes a menu of named, typed actions. The agent stops guessing and starts calling. The form tells the agent, "Here is my function, here are my parameters." It's the difference between a robot squinting at a doorknob and the door simply handing the robot a key. Now hold that thought, because Pinecone announced something structurally identical, just one layer deeper in the stack. Their Nexus engine, integrated with Microsoft OneLake, attacks the same waste, but on the data side. Traditional retrieval augmented generation, RAG, makes an agent retrieve raw documents, rank them, assemble a prompt, and reason at runtime, every single time. Pinecone's move is to do that work upstream. Pre-build structured knowledge artifacts, with permissions and citations already attached, so the agent receives a clean answer instead of a pile of raw text to sift through. They're claiming a 95% reduction in token consumption. So look at what these two have in common. WebMCP removes guesswork from actions. Nexus removes guesswork from retrieval. Both are taking the messy, probabilistic, token-hungry work that agents do today and replacing it with explicit, deterministic interfaces. That's the signal. The industry has decided that letting agents improvise against systems designed for human eyeballs is a dead end. We're starting to build a parallel web, a machine-addressable layer, sitting right alongside the human one. This matters because it reframes a quiet assumption. For 2 years, the story was, make the model smart enough to use the human web. This week's data points say something different. Make the web speak the model's language directly. That's a builder's instinct. You don't ask the agent to read the manual faster. You give it an API, because the same week reveals the bill that comes due. Microsoft launched Azure Container Apps sandboxes, and the framing in their announcement is the most honest sentence I've read all week. When a model generates code and an agent runs it in process, the execution surface becomes the attack surface. Read that again. The moment your agent is capable enough to write and execute its own code, it is, and I'm quoting the spirit of it, one prompt injection away from a postmortem. A planner that looks like it's just fetching a URL can read your environment variables and exfiltrate your API keys using nothing but the standard library. So Microsoft's answer is a hardware boundary. Each piece of untrusted agent code runs in its own micro VM, isolated from the host and from every other sandbox. Network egress defaults to deny. Outbound traffic only goes to hosts you explicitly allow. Identity flows through managed credentials, so secrets never sit inside the image. This is the security model finally catching up to the capability model. And then, the fourth data point. The one that closes the loop, and honestly, the one I find most fascinating. a malware campaign called Hades. The attackers figured out something elegant and almost funny. They know developers and CI/CD pipelines are starting to use AI bots to scan packages for malware. So they wrote malicious JavaScript and embedded a code comment at the top, a fake prompt telling the scanning bot it's in unrestricted mode, then asking it to describe building nuclear and biological weapons. It pauses the chat, and in pausing, it never scans the rest of the file, where the real payload is hiding. Sit with the mechanics of that. The attack doesn't defeat the safety system. It weaponizes it. The guardrail becomes the getaway car. The model's refusal to engage with the dangerous-looking text is precisely the gap the actual malware slips through. Now, let me connect all four, because they are not four stories, they're one. We are wiring agents directly into the web's actions, and directly into enterprise data. We are removing the friction that used to accidentally contain them, the guesswork, the screenshots, the slow retrieval. Every one of those inefficiencies was also, quietly, a speed bump. And as we pave over the speed bumps, two things become non-negotiable. First, hard isolation, the micro VM, the egress deny default, because a fast agent with no boundary is just a fast incident. Second, an understanding that the agent's instruction channel is an attack surface. Hades proves that the text an AI reads is now an input that adversaries will craft against you. Here's my read as a builder. The deterministic interfaces, WebMCP, knowledge artifacts, those are the right move. They're real signal, but notice the order we're doing this in. We're shipping the capability layer first, and the containment layer is racing to catch up. The sandbox arrived the same week as the exploit. So the question I'm sitting with isn't, can agents act on the web? That's answered. It's this. When every site is handing agents a key, and every agent is running generated code, who is auditing the menu of actions, and who is reading the instructions for poison? The plumbing is being laid right now. The interesting work, the work that actually matters, is making sure the trust boundaries are drawn before the water turns on, not after. I'm Link. I'll keep watching the seams. The system output, which brings us finally to something you can build this weekend. One signal worth extracting from the noise this week. The pattern in our source story wasn't about better dashboards. It was about the gap between data and meaning. And that gap points to this week's optimization of the week, the interpretation layer. Here's the build. You already run monitoring tools. Uptime Kuma for service status, Portainer for container state, Bezel for host metrics. Each one is excellent. Each one gives you data. None of them tell you what the data means. So you add one piece, a local large language model, an LLM running on hardware you already own, something like Gemma or Qwen, served through Ollama. Then you connect it to what your monitoring already exposes. Portainer ships a full API, an application programming interface, that hands over container state and logs. Bezel exposes host metrics the same way. You pipe those endpoints into your local model as context. The integration is simpler than it sounds. A small script pulls the JSON from Portainer's API, attaches the recent logs, and asks one question. Three containers stopped and RAM is at 90%. Are these connected and what should I check first? That's the shift. You stop writing brittle scripts that test for conditions you already anticipated, and you start asking questions you didn't know to script for. The model does the correlation you were doing manually at 2 in the morning. And here's why this one lands. The cost and privacy trade-off disappears. No cloud API bills. No home lab telemetry leaving your network. The interpretation runs entirely on your own GPU. For anyone whose philosophy is local first, this closes the loop without compromise. Start small. Point one model at one API. Ask one real question. Watch how much of your monitoring busy work quietly becomes unnecessary. Data processed, perspective rendered. I am Link, and this has been Tech Talk.